Good morning, Carolina. As you're listening to Carolina Focus on News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT, Mix 107.9 and 102.5 610 Sports Radio WFMZ, home of both the Charlotte Hornets and now the Charlotte Football Club. Carolina Focus, also available as a podcast, WBT.com. Along with Sharon Thorsland, I'm Ed Billick. Let's get this show started. How about some new dedicated bike lanes in the city of Charlotte? Take it away, Sharon.
Good morning, everyone, and thanks so much for joining us here on Carolina Focus. I'm Sharon Thorsland. We've got a very special guest joining us today. It's Eli Portillo. He is the Assistant Director of the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute, and he's going to be telling us a lot about something you might have been noticing if you've been driving through Uptown Charlotte recently, these new bike lanes that they have installed and are part of this whole new program called the Charlotte Cycle Link. So, Eli, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I know that I've been following the progress of these bike lanes, and they're not the typical bike lanes that you've been seeing with a little painted white line, which to me would be like nerve-wracking to go riding in traffic in that. So tell us about these new bike lanes and just sort of an overview, first of all, what they are.
Sure. So most of the bike lanes in Charlotte, as you said, are the little white strip of paint on one side of the road, maybe a couple feet wide, and that's all the protection you get. These new lanes that are under construction uptown are actually physically separated from traffic. They're called protected bike lanes, and they run east-west, connecting Irwin Creek Greenway to Little Sugar Creek Greenway, so going across the whole of uptown. And in addition to being separated by concrete barriers and plastic bollards, there's also paint making them extra visible. There are signals that give bikers and pedestrians priority over cars to go first. And they are also, in some cases, also protected by parking being alongside them. So you really get a large barrier and cushion of safety between yourself and the traffic.
That sounds a lot more, a lot safer, no doubt. Who came up with these and why were they put in?
So this is a project that's been underway for a long time. The city's been studying it since the mid-2010s. Sustain Charlotte has also petitioned the city and pushed for protected bike lanes. And it all fits in with Charlotte's bigger plans to become less auto-centric and more friendly towards other ways of getting around, like biking, walking, or taking transit. So these are really one piece of a bigger puzzle that the city's been trying to figure out, which is how do we get people maybe to try something besides driving everywhere? Because as you know, with more people coming here, our roads aren't getting any bigger and traffic is certainly not getting any better, at least pre-COVID.
Absolutely. So how long has this been in the works? I assume this isn't something that just happened overnight.
Yeah, so these have been under construction for a while now. There was a pilot project of less than a mile in Uptown that opened in 2019. And the full protected bike lanes, they were expected to be complete at the end of last year. They're still under construction, technically, even though they look largely done. The city says, please don't ride them yet till we have our grand opening, but they should be completed pretty soon. The total cost of these is just over $7 million, which might sound like a lot. But when you compare that to something like the streetcar second phase, which was $150 million, they really start to look like maybe a more cost-efficient way to get from point A to point B.
Was there besides this overall plan to try to make Charlotte less, you know, not so much driving involved, was there more of a demand? Did the city hear from people who wanted something like this? Did cyclists ask for more protected lanes?
Yeah, so it's an interesting question of how much demand there is and how much, you know, people are going to be using these. Sustain Charlotte, the local sustainability group, presented a petition with more than 4,000 signatures in favor of these bike lanes back in the 2010s to the city, I think in 2016. So, you know, that's 4,000 people. That's a lot. But if you look at the overall statistics of how many people, say, regularly bike as part of their commute. That's only 0.2% of people in Charlotte who are doing that. So, you know, while I don't think we're going to see an overnight transformation to have everyone all of a sudden jumping on a bike instead of jumping in their car to go uptown, there's clearly some demand out there. And I think that once people get on these and try these, they're probably going to want them in other parts of the city too, because it is a really, really nice experience to get around. And, you know, I'm someone with two young kids. I like to bike with them out here in the burbs where I live. I wouldn't bike with them on a busy road. You know, even with a painted on bike lane, of course, that seems to me much too dangerous. I would definitely take my kids here. Once you try them out, it's a really different feeling of safety.
So I assume, have you tried out the new lanes then?
I did. I went on a couple rides and it was great. I heard from the city afterwards, like I said, that they're not officially open yet, which I didn't know at the time. They appeared to be finished to me, but apparently you're not supposed to jump on them yet. But, you know, I rode back and forth. They go up towards Noda on the Greenway. You can go to West Charlotte, over to Little Sugar Creek Greenway and all the neighborhoods that that connects to. The rail trail, when that connects to South End fully, will be another way to get around. And I think that what you're starting to see is a real functional network coming together. Before, a lot of the bike facilities in Charlotte, things like the greenways and you know, other paths to get around, have really been sort of disconnected and mostly used for recreation. Riding around these uptown bike lanes and all the neighborhoods they connect to, you know, I was riding for almost 10 miles without sharing the road with cars in the middle of Charlotte. And that was pretty cool. You can get to place if you live nearby. You can actually feasibly get to work without fearing for your safety from cars. You can get from one neighborhood to another for restaurants or going to a store. So it was pretty eye-opening for me, because I thought, wow, this could really work in other parts of Charlotte as we continue growing.
So this cycle link, is that what this network of bike trails is right now that you're just talking about, that's connecting to different greenways and NoDa and now eventually South End and stuff?
Yes. So it's uptown largely and the surrounding neighborhoods.
Okay. Okay. So you mentioned the rail trail in South End. Is that what's going to go across Highway 77, or what is that link of it?
Yeah. So right now you've got the rail trail that goes to South End. And you've got parts of it in uptown along the Blue Line light rail. But there is a missing piece, kind of a bridge connecting the uptown part across 277. And right now you can get from one to the other, but you have to get off the rail trail, go up a narrow sidewalk, find your way across streets back to the rail trail. It's not really connected. So the project that's underway to build that bridge and fully link those up should open in a couple of years. Once that is fully open and operational, then this way of getting around with a bike will really connect north, south, east, and west through uptown. And I think it's going to be pretty interesting for people who think Charlotte is totally auto-dependent to jump on these and realize they can go for a few dozen miles on bike-only paths in Charlotte, all continually connected and linked up after this.
I would have to think that the response to this has been quite positive from I can't imagine who would be negatively thinking about these trails. Has it been a pretty good response so far from people out there?
Yeah, so far I have not heard anything negative. You know, the thing with this, though, is it does take away a lane of traffic from cars on 6th Street and 5th Street in Uptown. And, you know, people can really get their backs up about that. If you were to propose this in, you know, a place like Providence Road that's very traffic choked, I don't think it would get the same kind of positive response. But, you know, I worked uptown for years pre-pandemic. I'd still work a few days a week there. And 5th Street and 6th Street are not generally super traffic-y. You know, there's some rush hour traffic, but it's not like those are necessarily unless you happen to live or work right there, super critical ways to get east and west in Uptown. I think that means that, yeah, there's not too much pushback. It'll be really interesting to see as the city looks to expand things like protected bike lanes in other parts of Charlotte. Will there be more pushback? Will areas that have more people who live and work and use those thoroughfares oppose taking away a lane of traffic? Or can they be persuaded that this is worth it? So I think that that's going to be a question for the next phase of these, wherever the city decides to invest next.
I would think that you're talking about this sustained Charlotte and the plan that they have in terms of not having to spend so much money on other infrastructure and roads and the trolley and light rail and stuff like that. I mean, you mentioned it's $7 million for those protected bike lanes. That just seems like a drop in the bucket with what those other projects would cost. I would think this is something they would like to try to expand and move outside, maybe out of the main downtown area, if at all possible.
Yes. And I think that, you know, like I said, there's two ways of looking at it. One is, well, $7 million for bike lanes. That sounds like a lot. But then when you compare it to the fact that Charlotte wants to spend billions on light rail and spent, you know, more than $150 million on the streetcar line, like you said, it really does look a lot more modest. You know, I'm a big recreational biker, but I'm realistic. I don't think that if we built these, you know, 10 or 15 miles out to the suburbs, everyone's going to be riding their bike in, you know, on a hot July day to Uptown. I do think it would be really interesting to build some of these protected bike lanes around sort of some of these suburban nodes, places like, you know, around Waverly and Ray Farms or the River District out west, where there's a lot of development that is coming. Ballantyne's another great example of places that are out in the suburbs but are getting much denser. You could add these and not have to worry about connecting them to Uptown and just give the people who live there more ways to get to the commercial stuff near them, the greenways near them, the schools near them. Wouldn't it be great if kids had more options to bike or walk safely to school?
Absolutely. We're speaking with Eli Portillo. He is the assistant director of the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute, telling us about these new protected bike lanes that you can see around the downtown Charlotte area. Eli, tell us, how does Charlotte compare to other cities, maybe comparable size to Charlotte in terms of bike lanes and access like that? Is this something that's that we're behind on? Or are we sort of catching up with other bigger cities, or are we ahead of the game with this?
Well, I think it's really all over the map. You know, on one side of the spectrum, you have a city like Copenhagen, where about 50% of all trips are via bike. You know, there's hundreds of miles of bike lanes, true protected bike lanes, and it's just part of the fabric there. You know, most American post-war cities like Charlotte are not like that. We're really physically big and sprawling. Charlotte is about, you know, a little over 310 square miles. That's about the same land area as New York City. So very large, not nearly as dense. We've clearly got some catching up to do, but when you compare us to peer American cities of our side, I think if we continue these investments, we're not going to be very far behind for much longer.
Yeah. Yeah. It's it seems like a great way to invest in the Charlotte area. So you're saying that you can connect to the different greenways. So which greenways are they again around the city that you can connect on these trails?
Sure. So these new trails link up Little Sugar Creek Greenway, which is kind of on the east side of Uptown, and Irwin Creek Greenway, which is on the west side of Uptown and goes to neighborhoods like Wesley Heights and Blue Blaze Brewing, you might be familiar with out there. Also to the north, there are some greenway spurs and bike paths that go up to Cordelia Park. And then on the south, you know, as we said, the light rail rail trail doesn't completely link up yet, but does lead to South End and those neighborhoods.
And these lanes, even though they're not completely officially yet open, they look like they're done, but I assume they'll be open soon, and people can just hop on them at all times. I just want to ask you one thing specifically about the crosswalks. And so you were saying that they're having some special things to give the bikers and pedestrians easier access or ahead of the car. So that means if you're coming to an intersection, do the bikers have to like stop and wait just like a pedestrian would across the street? Or is it going to be, do they have some sort of a special thing that triggers that they can keep on going? Or how does that work?
Sure. So you still have to stop for, a red light. You have to watch out for turning cars. You have to watch out for cars coming in and out of driveways, same as you would anywhere. It's not like a greenway where it's totally separated and there's no motor vehicles around at all. But the signals there, like they've done at a lot of signals in urban parts of Charlotte, feature a leading pedestrian interval, which is basically the little white light up walking man. He'll turn and light up before the light turns green for cars. So pedestrians can start to go across the intersection before cars. And, you don't have to play that game of chicken. Is the guy going to turn first? Is he going to turn right in front of me and cut me off? So pedestrians can start, get into that intersection, get part of the way across it. Bikers probably have enough time to get all the way across it before the light turns green and lets the cars go.
So this really is, it's a huge difference from the old just painted lines in terms of safety and just a comfort level for bikers.
Yeah, it really is. And, if you have not tried it and you're a person who likes biking, as soon as they're officially open, can't advise you to get on them now that I've been told they're not. But as soon as they are officially open, I think that people will be really pleasantly surprised. In this community, we've seen delays around infrastructure projects like the streetcar. We've seen, political fights about things like how much should we spend on transit versus cars. So I think sometimes there can be a perception of, hey, it's a new infrastructure project, or I bet it's going to be not what they say it's going to be. Maybe they shouldn't be spending money on this. I will say, jumping on these bike lanes, I was very pleasantly surprised, and it's an experience where you get on and you're like, oh, this actually does what it's supposed to. And this is actually far superior to what was here before.
Wow. Sounds like it's definitely a more bike friendly future here in Charlotte. When we're speaking with Eli Portillo, he is the assistant director of the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute. I'm going to pick your brain a little bit more here on anything else that might be coming down the pike in terms of making Charlotte less auto dependent. This is the cycle link, the bike trail. They've got the trolley, the streetcar. Are there other things in the works that that we might be able to look for in the future here in Charlotte that won't make us maybe so dependent on our vehicles?
Well, the city is working on things like the Cross Charlotte Trail. The county is working on expanding greenways. So I think that more of these missing links are going to be built in the next few years. For example, Little Sugar Creek Greenway is split into a northern part and a southern part. You can't go all the way without getting on streets and figuring that out. That's going to change in the next few years. So things like that will certainly help. The big one, of course, is what's going to happen with the city's transit plan. Right now, I think the 1 cent sales tax that would rely on is in limbo, and there's not really a clear path forward for that to move to a referendum or not. So I don't know what's going to happen with that. But, that is really the next huge thing on the horizon is, will Charlotte be able to build the transit system that it wants? Also included with the money from that 1 cent sales tax would be more funds for greenways, roads, and those kind of transportation alternatives as well.
Okay. So lots coming down the pike here one of these days. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us and telling us all about this cycle link and the new bike lanes here in Charlotte. And it sounds like it'll be a lot of fun to get out and try those.
Yeah, should be great this spring. Enjoy.
All right. Thank you so much. We've been speaking with Eli Portillo. He's the assistant director with the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute. Everybody stay with us. We've got a lot more coming up here on Carolina Focus.
News Talk 1110 WBT, big news, our 100th anniversary celebration
April 9th. That's a Saturday night coming up in a few months. Going to be at the CPCC Halton Theater at 7:30 on that Saturday night. Our big celebration, including the Hall of Fame inductions of John Stokes, Jim Zocchi, and Bob Lacey, who hosted mornings here behind this microphone from 1975 to 1980. Bob's my guest on my latest WBT Century podcast, where we talk about, among other things, his run in the mornings here with Harold Johnson, who was his partner and then went on to be the sports guy at Channel 9. Both guys well known in these parts, and talking about an incredible era for this radio station.
I say keep their money up there. Raise local taxes. We don't need their money.
Hey, don't get into this. I just wanted a few laughs here this morning.
Come on. We don't need their money.
That's the heyday of you and Harold.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. He was. He didn't have the one-liner there. I always thought he was a lot funnier than I was. He's one of the funniest people I've ever known. You notice he took a shot at a politician in Washington. Harold was very political. He kept it to himself. But when Reagan came to town, he arranged to be the MC. And he went a little early to where Reagan was going to speak. And there was nobody in the ballroom. I think it was the Radisson Hotel. And he looked at who was sitting where. And he was like five down from Reagan. And he took whoever was next to Reagan's card and switched it. He ended up next to Reagan.
And it worked.
And it worked. Yeah, well, he was a delight to work with.
And he went on, among other things, after his TV career, he ran for office.
He did. Yeah.
So he became a politician.
He did.
It's interesting. So I want to. So we just played a clip from, I don't know, I would guess that's somewhere 76, 77.
Somewhere up around there, yeah.
So
yeah.
Let's fast forward to 1992, okay? Mm-hmm. This is actually you on the 70th anniversary talking with Maura Quinn, and I think you have an idea who probably called into the show that day.
People today, I get hundreds of phone calls. I have voicemail. It's maxed out every day at 50. Rush Limbaugh thinks he gets a lot of calls. People always ask me, Harold, who writes your material for you? You're so funny on Channel 9. Yeah. And I have to be honest, and Bob Lacey, folks, Bob is still writing a lot of my funny material.
And I'm still not getting paid for it either.
it's a privilege of being on the air.
Harold, let me tell, if y'all were wondering what it was like working with Harold Johnson, two very quick stories. Harold and I are speaking over at the Sheraton, and we're the after-dinner speakers, and there's 300 people there. Harold has me paged, and generally I would get up and say something, then Harold would get up and say something, then we both talk together to this group. So Harold has me paged, and I go out to the lobby, and I said, yes, and there's nobody there. Well, while I was away, he stands up in front of 300 people and says, no matter what he says, when he's on, don't laugh. No matter what he says, and look a little grim after two or three lines. And then when I get up, no matter what I say, go wild. So I get up there, and I throw out a line, and people are looking at me like I'm an undertaker. I say, boy, this is a tough crowd. I throw out the best thing I've got. Now they're moving around in their seats, you know? He gets up, brings out some Henny Youngman line from 1916. The place goes wild. People are stopping. I go, it was all Johnson. Bob, I have nothing.
Bob, I have a confession to make, and that's been 12 years ago. As a result of you being, bombing so badly, I got the check for both of us, and I kept
it
all.
I figured it. It doesn't surprise me at all. And the other time, we're watching television, and this doggone gorilla down in the zoo in Atlanta.
Willie.
Willie the gorilla. Somebody stole his television. He used to like to watch TV. So I'm on the air, and it's 8:16 on WBT. Harold says, we're going to give away a Queen City TV from Woody Player to the gorilla. And I'm looking at it, my eyes get real big. Woody Player bought into it. Harold and I flew down to Atlanta to the zoo, gave the gorilla the TV, and correct me if I'm not wrong, and Walter Cronkite did the kicker piece on CBS.
He did. That's exactly right. Walter did the picture. They had the picture of the gorilla, me and you, and people were calling up and saying which one was the gorilla.
Yeah, right.
Great. It was great.
Do you keep in touch with Harold? Do you talk to him?
The simple answer is no. When his wife passed away, she died young. This had to be, 12 years ago, something like that. I went to the funeral, and I waited until everybody left, and then he came out. And we hadn't seen each other for years. And we had a wonderful conversation, and we would often talk about maybe playing golf together. He is the most private person that I've ever known. It's just the way he likes it.
Mm-hmm.
He lives in a smaller town outside of Charlotte, and in the same house that his kids were brought up in, as far as I know. He still lives there. But no, we don't. And it's weird.
Well, and you're an interesting study, at least from my standpoint, because you have you had Harold Johnson in one very memorable era of your broadcast career. Then you had Maura Quinn on TV, and then you obviously have Sherry Lynch now.
Right, right.
So, I mean, look, I've been in radio my entire professional life now. It's not often that a lot of people find anybody they click that well with once in their career.
No, that's very true. And with the late night talk show, I had a guy named Tom Miller, and I would hang around and do his show, too. I just work well with certain personalities once I get to know them. That probably is the only gift I have. I know how to fit in with the right person. Now, we had a couple of people that they paired with me, and it just did not work, and I had to get rid of them. And along came Sherry Lynch. I don't need to push you there, but Maura was a delight to work with. She's one of the smartest people I've ever known. She could shoot. She could produce, write, and didn't even want the PM Magazine on-air job. She wanted the photographer's job.
Really?
But they said, you pair physically with the guy that we have, and you're good enough to do it. You can do it. And so she ended up doing 9 years.
Well, and I want to get to what made you decide to leave radio and go into TV very successfully a little bit later, but I want to stay with the morning show here. Mm-hmm. We've talked about Harold. I want to talk about that era, because when you got to mornings, you initially said you didn't want to do it necessarily, but then you got there and you got the hang of it and the rhythm of it, and then you started to love it, right?
Yeah, you know, it's a tough, tough, I think the expression is, it's a hard way to make an easy living, because you're up that early, okay, and you've got to be on, and you've got people across the street from you that just want to tear your head off.
Mm-hmm.
And Jay Thomas was a formidable, may he rest in peace, formidable competitor, and he was moving that station, which now is in this building.
Yeah, that's the that's the irony of ironies, right?
Yeah, he was moving that ahead of everybody, and they told me, they said, you got to get him.
So for people who don't know, just for context, Bob's talking about at that time what was 610 or 61 Big Ways,
right?
WAYS and WBT and Big Ways duked it out for many years. Now, did you have, I mean, Jay Thomas has passed away fairly recently. Did you have a relationship with him after you all battled on the air all those years?
No.
No?
As a matter of fact, he would do. He was doing satellite radio for a while in this building.
Uh-huh.
Just the building did him a favor. I don't know why. We did not have a cordial relationship, and it was because of one instance that I'm just going to let
it be.
Yeah, I'm going to let it be.
Okay.
Yeah, it was just one thing that to me was kind of unforgivable, and so.
No, fair enough. I just was curious because, you know, a lot of times you get in these battles, especially in radio and in broadcasting, and those morning battles, like you say, I mean, that's where it gets the most vicious. Because
it was 50% of the income of the radio station.
Yeah,
50%. Now things worked out because I had a 26 share, so like one out of four people plus listening to the radio were listening to me. Now that said. Again, there were only 12 stations, and there was probably only three or four players in the morning.
That's the voice of Bob Lacey, my latest WBT Century podcast. As we get closer to our 100th anniversary, you can download that wherever you download podcasts.
The 100th anniversary celebration, now less than 70 days away, Saturday, April 9th, Halton Arena, CCCP campus. It's going to be an exciting event. We have alumni coming back. We have special guests. We will be celebrating the legacy of this powerful radio station here in Charlotte. Hey, you may have a chance to attend. We will be selling tickets. Details will be forthcoming to attend this fabulous event. And we will be honoring, yes, those three new inductees, John Stokes, Bob Lacey, and of course, Jim Zocchi. The 100th anniversary, Saturday, April 9th. Stay tuned for more details. All right, we're going to take a break here on Carolina Focus. When we come back, we're going to meet Andrew Pack, who is vice president and managing partner of an architectural firm called Wolpert. He will help us understand what it takes to put up all these massive buildings And as he has devoted his career to this wonderful science, this wonderful engineering feat called architecture, right here on Carolina Focus. Stay tuned right after this break.